Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 25th day of June, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And as you know, sometimes I like to start the show off with a story or two that kind of sets the tone. And today I've got two from Michael Snyder that really do. The first one asks a question, sign of the times, and says weather patterns all over the planet are going absolutely nuts. In fact, he says we've never seen global weather patterns go quite as crazy as they have so far in 2019. Not only did we see massive amounts of snow in places like the Rockies just last week, and here in the Southern Rockies, folks, we just had the latest frost I can ever remember. But record high temperatures other places are being shattered all over the planet. The sixth largest city in India is literally running out of water due to extremely dry conditions, but in middle America, it just won't stop raining. In fact, he says, as I write this piece, the Midwest is getting hammered by even more severe storms. And meanwhile, Australia is being forced to import enormous amounts of wheat due to the extraordinary drought that nation is currently experiencing. It's almost, folks, like somebody is shifting weather patterns and moving weather that people want somewhere to other places where the folks are sick and tired of it and have had more than enough. But still, says Snyder, do we have an explanation? The truth is, most experts don't. Well, most experts, folks, owe their livelihoods one way or another to Big Brother, so even if they know, they're not about to risk their careers and tell you. The related Michael Snyder piece, this time from the Economic Collapse blog rather than the End of the American Dream, includes what he calls shocking before and after photos that reveal the truth about the widespread crop failures the U.S. is facing this year. And while your host is fixing to summarize those for you, admittedly, it is a lot more graphic to actually see the pictures from last year and this year from countries all across the heartland, Nebraska, Indiana, Kansas, Illinois, and so forth. Torrential rains, it says, have been hammering the heartland of America for months, and at this point, vast stretches of farmland in the middle of the country are nothing but mud. And as a result of the endless rain and unprecedented flooding that we've witnessed, millions of acres of farmland simply have nothing planted on them at all for 2019, and that's a major national crisis. But many farmers were able to get seeds planted in the deplorable conditions and are now desperately hoping that something will actually grow. But on farm after farm, what's coming out of the ground looks pretty terrible, he says. And even if we get ideal weather for the rest of the summer, there's no way that many of those fields will be ready before the first hard frost arrives. And the truth is, we're potentially facing the worst and most widespread crop failures in all of U.S. history. If this goes on, he concludes, we could be facing a national nightmare that's beyond what most of us would ever dare to imagine. So, it's certainly time for the wise to start preparing. And of course, if all of that wasn't already enough, scientists who studied solar cycles, although they don't necessarily know why, have long observed that associated with a solar minimum, not the 11-year period, folks, but the longer ones, there are often major increases in volcanism or earthquakes and volcanic activity in particular around the planet. And we're seeing that of late as well. Says a story from Strange Sounds, with lots of pictures from various NASA and NOAA satellites, and even a few taken from the space station, the long-dormant Ryukyu volcano on the Kuril Islands, which last erupted in 1924, and before that only in 1778, has ended its dormant period with a massive eruption. When on June 22nd, a vast plume of ash and volcanic gases shot up from its 700-meter-wide crater and rose more than 40,000 feet into the air. Since ash can represent a hazard to aircraft, of course, there have been some diversions around the downwind area. And as the NASA photos are captioned, an unexpected series of blasts from the remote volcano sent ash and volcanic gases streaming high over the North Pacific Ocean, where they will disperse and probably affect weather patterns to varying degrees, first over the Pacific and then the Northern Hemisphere. One thing's for sure, folks, although you won't hear this from the carbon taxers and anthropogenic global warmists, increased volcanism like this is far more likely to result in global cooling than any of the hysteria they're trying to condition you to be afraid, be very afraid of. None of this, though, seems to have resulted in wisdom returning to Oregon yet, where Socialist Governor Kate Brown still has the state police out hunting for wayward Republicans who won't allow a vote on their bogus climate change and economic destruction bill. And as the latest update from the Associated Press suggests, the dispute shows no signs of ending soon, and that's probably the best news in here. And you know what, folks? The worst thing about having to do stories like this is the spin that you inevitably find always close to the top of the searches when you try and get an update on a situation like in Oregon. BS like the bill would reduce greenhouse gas emissions that affect global climate. And then there's stories like this one from Slate that talk about threats from far-right militia groups planning to protest outside the statehouse. But don't particularly take note of far-left groups like Antifa that routinely seem to run Portland and whack people over the head with bike locks amidst other acts of actual violence. In other words, and this pretty well encapsulates the whole so-called debate, they ignore real problems and real solutions and focus on the lies instead. Speaking of which, and I really wasn't going to do this story, but it just fits so well here. Everybody knows, says a piece from Natural News, that the most pressing issue of the day isn't homelessness, disease, or poverty. It's certainly not famine, folks, nor is it the invasion from the South. No, says the piece, it's getting triggered by the name printed on your credit card. They put a sarcasm note in there, which is why MasterCard has decided to unveil the True Name card for transgenders. Yes, as a recent company announcement, many members of the LGBTQIA+, and put in some more letters there real soon now, like bestiality community, are experiencing major pain from having to use credit cards, debit cards, and other prepaid cards that don't, quote, reflect their true identity. So MasterCard plans to fix this by letting the alphabet supers use any made-up name they want. Swinging wide open the door suggests Ethan Huff to mass identity theft. But hey, that's not a concern now, is it? We are working with partners, they said, public and private, no doubt, folks, to create a product as well as a sensitive and private process. Give me a break. Is there any such thing in the big bankster world? Free of personal questions that will allow for true names, not dead names, to appear on cards without the requirement of a legal name change. This, they claim, will ease a major pain point for the transgender and non-binary community. Unquote. And no doubt soon, folks, if you're a Bible believer, constitutionalist, or other non-preferred person, you probably won't be allowed to have a debit card, credit card, or bank account anyway, so don't worry about it. But when it comes to outright destruction, I guess MasterCard has got nothing on the People's Republic of California and the outright communist dictator there masquerading as governor, Gavin Newsom, who, says Monica Showalter at the American Thinker, has now put out a video. I guess he's trying to one-up the idiot occasional cortex for illegals on how to obstruct ICE. Yes, she says, I thought it was satire, something cooked up by his political enemies, because you couldn't put out a less attractive video than the one Gavin Newsom did for illegal aliens via Twitter, advising them himself on how to obstruct ICE from any attempts to deport the criminals. And sure enough, he wasn't hacked. It really was good old blue-checked he in the, I guess what you'd have to call, flesh. And the in-your-face irony and outright hypocrisy here, folks, ought to be enough to get the guy impeached, tried, and convicted. The caption under the video actually says this, if you can believe it. Talk about hubris. In California, I want folks to know you have rights. Oh, really, Gavin? They don't have a right to keep and bear arms, or to be free in their person, houses, papers, and effects from unlawful search and seizure, unless, evidently, they've illegally entered the country. Here's how Monica Showalter puts it, leaving aside the fact that he's the governor of a U.S. state, and that, folks, is doubtful, supposedly there to represent the interests of that state's citizens, yeah, sure, rather than those of the foreigners who've come here without papers, quite illegally, and run up the tab using his state services. Well, they're his constituents now, too, like the one he chooses to represent over those of the voters. Oh, wait, well, I think the implication there is obvious. He's acting as their lawyer now, advising them on how to thwart ICE like some National Lawyers Guild activist there to obstruct the feds. It's also insulting to voters, he said, because Newsom cited Prop 187 back in the 90s as something, quote, we've been through before. As if to say voters never approved this measure to keep illegals from using free U.S. services until it was overturned by the courts. And more creepy still, he actually cites the three strikes law, as if to acknowledge that illegals can commit quite a few crimes while they're here sopping up the services before they have to worry about actually striking out. And besides, folks, that's what attorneys general like Kamala Harris and her ilk are for, to make sure that only honest people ever end up having to worry about the almighty boot of Big Brother on their necks, selectively enforcing crimes that other folks, more preferred folks, can get away with. And she adds it's well out of the realm of reality, given that voters polled say they aren't particularly happy with his handing out free health care to the foreign population here illegally in a bid to incentivize still more of them to come on in. Really, suggests the author, it's all about not only thwarting President Trump, but continuing an invasion that California has already been a big part of in order to overturn what's left of the formerly free United States of America. That was before they put a K in it. If we still actually had a constitution, folks, this truly is an act of war. Changing gears, but only slightly, an act of war on a different front. In news, says Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, that initially didn't receive much prominence, on Monday, a U.S. judge found three large Chinese banks, reportedly the state-owned Bank of Communications, China Merchants Bank, and Shanghai Pudong Development Bank, in contempt for refusing to comply with subpoenas in an investigation into North Korean sanctions violations. And that, in turn, and listen carefully to this, folks, could open the door for them to be cut off from the U.S. financial system, i.e., the SWIFT system for international financial transactions and clearing of paper dollars. And needless to say, continues the story, the stock prices of all three Chinese banks listed on the Shanghai Stock Exchange tumbled dramatically after the announcement. All of this represents another escalation in the North Korean sanctions issue and, of course, the continuing tension buildup with China. And the ruling, says the WAPO, means that Attorney General William P. Barr or Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin can terminate these banks' U.S. accounts and their ability to process U.S. dollar transactions. Should this occur, commented Rabobank's Michael Every, to say that China will not take that well is as large an understatement as one can conceive of. It would literally, he said, be an earthquake. And interestingly, concludes the Zero Hedge summary, the news that the U.S. may, I'll put the word again in here, use SWIFT as leverage, in this case against China, comes just days before the G20 summit in Japan this weekend, which will be the first meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping since trade talks between the two countries broke off back in May. They will discuss issues such as tariffs, subsidies, technology, intellectual property, and cybersecurity, among other things, and perhaps, who knows, folks, even war. Speaking of which, after President Trump didn't go through, almost at the last minute, with the attack on Iran last week, but did escalate some more sanctions, which was followed quickly by Iran's foreign ministry in a tweet Tuesday saying that the new U.S. sanctions that target their supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and other Iranian officials permanently ends any chance of diplomacy between the countries. And if that wasn't already enough, it was followed then by Iranian President Rouhani, who mocked the White House, saying it's, quote, afflicted by mental retardation, during a television address. And while he's been credited with prudence in how he's been dealing with the situation so far, after Iran unceremoniously slammed the door on diplomacy, the president decided to tweet his own perspective on what happens next, saying, quote, Iran leadership doesn't understand the words nice or compassion. They never have. Sadly, the thing they do understand is strength and power, and the USA is by far the most powerful military force, and he capitalized it in the world, with $1.5 trillion invested over the last 2 years alone. Note here, folks, that doesn't include protecting our own borders. And then he went on to say how the wonderful Iranian people are suffering, and for no reason at all. But capped it all off with this final tweet, saying, quote, Iran's very ignorant and insulting statement put out today only shows that they do not understand reality. Any attack by Iran on anything American will be met with great and overwhelming force. In some areas, overwhelming will mean obliteration. I do kind of at least like this last line. He says, no more John Kerry and Obama. Is yet another war, this time with Iran and perhaps lots of other folks, inevitable? More and more does seem that way. Patrick Coburn, via the UNS Review, writes that Trump may already be in too deep, even though he backed off over the weekend, to avoid war with Iran. Some kind of military conflict, he says, is looking increasingly probable. He gives a lot of reasons that you've probably already heard. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts says something similar, warning that as we face Armageddon, the Western world appears to be leaderless, and the fact that Trump hasn't fired Bolton and Pompeo for almost igniting a conflagration and hasn't even dressed down his moronic vice president for the same thing means it can all happen again. So be prepared for a larger orchestrated provocation, because all of the neocons and warmongers know that the Western prostitutes, as he puts it, will lie for them. So watch for a provocation that leaves Trump no alternative but an attack. Tucker Carlson at Fox, meanwhile, almost alone among the major media counseling for peace, has again mocked the neocons by noting that the very same folks pushing for the attack on Iran are the same ones also pushing to open up America's borders to migrants and other terrorists right from that same area, among tons of others, of course. And yeah, it still seems to your host like if they're really, really looking for a war, they don't need to look nearly that far away. In fact, it's coming to us. And since all that's been pretty heavy, let's change gears. Next, a few stories from what I guess I'm going to have to call the crash and burn segment, starting with this one about SpaceX's latest launch, that's Elon Musk's other company, and it's ended with a fiery crash. Though it's carried out a handful of successful launches, begins the summary from Zero Hedge, SpaceX's legacy of launch day malfunctions is by now well recognized and likely create problems for CEO Elon Musk as he pushes forward to launch the company's first manned spaceflight by the end of the year. In the latest setback, though, the company failed in what RT described as an audacious mission to retrieve rocket boosters after launch. After the main rocket did successfully land on a sea-based launch pad, and the Falcon Heavy side boosters, two out of the three, landed at the SpaceX landing zones 1 and 2, the center booster, the core booster, that had helped power the rocket missed the pad entirely and crashed into the sea in a fiery and expensive explosion. So call it 2 out of 3. At the very least, concludes the piece, the two Falcon Heavy side boosters did land safely and will be reused for the first time after their landings. However, the core booster wasn't so lucky. Nevertheless, the company describes the mission as a success given the launch of 24 satellites that they did manage to get into orbit. Not to mention sending the cremated remains of 152 people on board into space at a cost of $5,000 per gram of ashes. Anderson Cooper, though, and the Communist News Network may have had an even more expensive crash-and-burn cremation less than 48 hours after a columnist and soon-to-be book author named E. Jean Carroll accused, in a New York Magazine article, now President Donald Trump of raping her in a dressing room in a high-end department store in the 1990s, CNN gleefully invited the accuser on to discuss the horrific details from her past. But things didn't go according to plan for CNN, and perhaps not, suggests Tyler Durden, for Ms. Carroll's book sales. While President Trump has vehemently denied the rape ever took place, a sensitive Anderson Cooper welcomed the woman onto his CNN show, whereupon things went, let's just say, not according to plan, when Ms. Carroll basically went off script. Cooper asked Carroll, "You don't feel like a victim?" after she'd suggested that this was the case, but then things went downhill fast. The seemingly unstable Carroll replied, "I wasn't flung to the floor," prompting Cooper to retort, "I think most people think of rape as a violent assault," to which Carroll replied, stunning the CNN anchor, "I think most people think of rape as being sexy," whereupon Cooper stuttered, stumbled, and then quickly cut the interview straight to a commercial break, but not before Carroll could add, "Think of the fantasies." Maybe, suggests Tyler Durden, the Clinton News Network ought to vet the mental health of their Trump-bashing guest just a little bit better. Better still, your host here suggests, they should invite on real rape victims, like the plethora of those that suffered at the hands, or whatever, of William Jefferson Blythe Clinton. And perhaps, at the risk of being politically incorrect, but hey, if you're not, you're not paying attention these days, they need to understand the difference between a rape victim and a groupie. From there, off we go to London Stand, which has not only proven that not only does gun control not work, neither does knife control, and now they need acid control. After the second in a series of acid attacks since last week, shocking video says the piece purports to show an acid attack in progress, and it went viral after it was uploaded to the internet. although over the weekend it was unclear exactly what had happened in the dramatic footage showing two men throwing something into a vehicle on the London roadway, after which two victims frantically got out of the car, stripping and shaking violently, while passersby helped to wash them off with water. London police have now confirmed the second in a series of acid attacks in the beleaguered, formerly free city, leaving inquiring minds who are still paying attention to wonder, as the migrant crime wave continues, what will Londoners see banned next? And maybe these stories really aren't now so much about crash and burn as they are just keep asking for it. According to Welt am Sonntag, the German government can't manage to locate over 160 German sympathizers with Islamic State who left home to fight with that terrorist organization and then may have returned to Germany, but they're just not sure. The Federal Ministry of the Interior speculates that most of them were likely killed in combat, but some of them could have succeeded in escaping and or disappearing back into the country. The request for information, think of it as kind of a German FOIA, were made by the Free Democrats, or FDP, whose General Secretary Linda Teuteberg told Welt that it was highly disturbing that further steps weren't being taken to prevent potential ISIS fighters from re-entering Germany, quote, in light of the known patchy protection, to put it mildly, at the EU's external borders. Teuteberg added that the German government has, quote, no plan for dealing with foreign fighters from Germany or prosecuting for their actions, and all of this, she said, applies, quote, to the Germans detained in the conflict zones, as well as the more than 200 former IS supporters who are now back in Germany, unquote. Finally, here's one that hasn't crashed and burned, but should. Gulag, already infamous for its privacy violations, especially when it comes to its Android cell phone operating system, along with Apple, of course, so there's not much, if any, alternative, all of which like to track you, listen to you, and monitor you wherever you go. And no, your Google searches aren't private either. But even the WAPO and its tech columnist Jeffrey Fowler is now on board saying that, hey, did you know that Google's Chrome browser is essentially spy software? He spent a week analyzing the popular and pretty much mandatory in some circles browser, concluding it, quote, looks a lot like surveillance software, and has since said he switched to Mozilla's Firefox because of its default privacy settings, and that it was easier than one might imagine, even though no doubt Chrome still has some hooks in people that have ever used it. My tests, he wrote, of Chrome v. Firefox unearthed a personal data caper of absurd proportions. In just a week of web surfing on my desktop, I discovered 11,189 requests for tracker cookies that Chrome would have ushered right into my computer, but that were automatically blocked by Firefox. And these little files, he reminds users who don't know about them, are the hooks that data firms, especially including Google, use to follow what websites you visit so they can build profiles of your interest, income, and personality. And of course, he's understating the point there. And yes, they have other ways of listening to you and monitoring you as well. Chrome, he said, though, welcomed trackers even at websites you would have thought to be private. Like Aetna and the Federal Student Aid website. And who's he kidding, folks? Did he really think those would be private? And if you look in the upper right-hand corner of your Chrome browser and see a picture or a name in the circle, that means you're logged in, and Google is probably tapping into your web activity, even if you don't remember signing in, because they've started doing it automatically when you use their service, Gmail. And yeah, just try getting an Android phone without it. And there's a whole lot more, most of which people who don't get their news from the likes of CNN or the WAPO may have heard about. And meanwhile, he says Chrome is even worse when it comes to mobile devices, reporting the precise location of Android users, unless location sharing is turned off, in which case it will just send out your rough coordinates. And let's understand, folks, that when it comes to location sharing, if Big Brother and no doubt Google really want to know where you are, they can turn it on remotely. I guess you could say that, kind of like locks on your home, privacy settings only keep out the more honest criminals. Let's wrap it up today with one quick observation from Bill Blaine's Morning Porridge concerning overvalued Wall Street and almost $13 billion of bonds at negative yields. Well, he says, the markets look just plain wrong, and everybody knows it. There can't be a serious financial investor on the planet that doesn't get it. The only reason stock and bond prices are this high is because everyone expects ultra low, low, low interest rates and more easy money. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.